Hi, friends. It's Abby Feeder, certified life and fertility coach, and you're listening to The Fertility Chick. This show is all about the path to parenthood, which is never the same for everyone, and our guests' professional success along the way. We have an incredible guest today. So March is also Endometriosis Awareness Month. And I love that it is because endometriosis, when I was growing up, was never mentioned. I didn't know anything about it. And women my age and even younger who are learning and talking and sharing stories more about their own incredibly painful symptoms, their painful menstrual cycles, are shedding so much light on this disease, which has an average of 10 years to be diagnosed. Today, we're talking with Diana Falzone, who's an ambassador for EndoFound, the Endometriosis Foundation, which aims to educate, really, even in schools, women and people born with a uterus and children about the symptoms and treatment of endometriosis so that A, you don't have to suffer in silence, and B, we can start getting some more development funds and research going to really get a handle on this disease, which can be really debilitating. Diana is, as I said, an ambassador for Endometriosis Foundation, which was co-founded by Padma Lakshmi, who was one of the first celebrities to ever speak up about her endometriosis. And I can't wait for you to hear her story. Here's Diana. By the way, also my best friend's name is Diana, and she gets so upset when people call her Diana, which I also understand, you know?
I do. I get it. It's our ownership of our name.
That's right. Okay. So speaking of which, we are here with the amazing Diana Falzone, like Calzone, if anyone needs a reminder. Diana, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. Lovely to meet you.
You too. And you have so many nuggets to share. It's Endometriosis Awareness Month still by the time this episode is released. So why don't we start there with your personal experience with endometriosis? I always love to know when you were diagnosed, how you were diagnosed, and how much sooner you wish you had been diagnosed.
Those are excellent questions. I was diagnosed in 2016 when I was almost 33 years old, and it was after a sudden onset of symptoms in my workplace at the time where I thought I was having appendicitis, but I had so much bleeding along with it, and it was outside of my normal menstrual cycle. Nausea, low-grade temperature, shaking. It felt like my body was being taken over. I ended up going to an ER where they had a general practitioner examine me and say, you know, you should go to your gynecologist. I'm like, really? In this whole big fancy hospital, telling me to go see my gynecologist? Isn't there someone here? And I couldn't get anyone to pay attention to me there. So I ended up going to my gyno. My gyno's like, you look sick. You're bleeding heavily. I'm not really sure what's going on with you, but here, take this entire thing of birth control in one day, if you can't handle the bleeding.
Wait a minute. Like an entire month's worth in one day?
In one day to stop the bleeding.
I've never heard that ever in all my endometriosis stories. I've never heard a gyno tell somebody that.
Yes.
Oh my God.
And this
okay.
was in Manhattan at the time where I was living. And I was just kind of like, well, wait. And it wasn't like, this is what we're going to do to treat this, or we're going to look into this. It was more like, if you can't handle the bleeding, take this pack of birth control to stop it. And it was my friend who was a health editor, the news organization I was working at, who said, oh my gosh, like that is not a medical intervention. You need to see a specialist. So after I finally got to a specialist, she saw, I guess, some sort of mass or fibroid in my uterus after a transvaginal ultrasound and said, you know, I have a really strong suspicion you have something called endometriosis. Now, talking about what you wish you knew all those years before, I was 11 when I started my period. And I had ovarian cysts repeatedly. I had the first one rupture when I was 13, vomiting, terrible, heavy periods. But I didn't tell my mom that I was bleeding for 14 days out of the month. Or I was using so many pads, she would say to me, you know, Diana, I looked in the garbage. Are you okay? Because I didn't know that wasn't normal. How would I know? I had no baseline. I was a kid. After the ovarian cyst ruptured and I had to go to the hospital, again, no one mentioned endometriosis. My mom's like, this is not normal. This is not normal. So all these years later, here I am, 32, a couple weeks away from my 33rd birthday. And the doctor who's like, high suspicion you have endometriosis, let's go do an anti-Müllerian hormone test while we're at it. Because sometimes with endometriosis, your fertility can be affected. As we know, endometriosis and infertility can be linked. Endometriosis is one of the leading causes of infertility. So I went and got the normal blood test. You can get this blood test with the doctor's script, just a blood draw.
Same thing as AMH we talk about on the show. And yours is the very technical term, anti-Müllerian hormone. It's same thing as AMH.
AMH is the abbreviation. So I got the news when the doctor called and said, "Hey, are you sitting down?" I'm like, when a doctor calls and they ask you if you're sitting down, I still remember exactly where I was standing. And I grabbed a Sharpie, because that's all I could find, a black Sharpie, a notepad. And I just heard her say, "You have the AMH of a woman who's in her 50s, who is in menopause." And I was turning 33, like in 2 weeks. And I just remember going, "What? Like, oh, man, how is that possible?" And I said, "Well, what do I do? How do I get it up?" And she's like, "Not how it works that way, right? Not how it works." But again, I wasn't on a fertility path. I was on a get me out of this pain, get me well, get me back on my feet so I can be productive and get back to being me. I wasn't thinking about having babies, although that was always my number one goal, to have a family, to be a mom. So this just devastated me. And I was like, "What do I do?" She goes, "Well, you're going to need to have something called IVF if you're ever going to get pregnant. I don't know if that's even going to work for you. But first, I'm going to get you in touch with an endometriosis excision surgeon. And you're going to have surgery first. And then we'll worry about the fertility later." And I'm like, "What?"
Oh, like, that is all I'm thinking about. There's a lot to process at once.
It was.
I wanted to ask one other thing. Oh, in terms of IVF, did you know anything about IVF at that point when she had said it to you?
I knew what it was, and I knew that it was a process, and I knew it wasn't a silver bullet, that it might not work.
But it was actually ahead of the game, because I all definitely thought it was a silver bullet. I'm like, once you move to IVF, you get your baby. That's just it, right? I think a lot of us think that, and it's clearly not true. Okay. Right. So you're processing all of this, 32 years old. What do you do next?
So I get ready to meet with the surgeon. I'm told there's a chance. Well, they knew there was something because it showed up in the sonogram. So they knew they were going to find something. They just didn't know if it was going to test or biopsy as endometriosis, because as we know at this point, even though there's so many amazing research going on, like the Rose study, which can test like the menstrual affluence, and that's still not done. But right now we have invasive testing, which is laparoscopic exploratory surgeries, where they test the tissue, they biopsy it, they can finally see if you have endometriosis, and that's considered the gold standard of testing. So they prepped me for surgery. I had a very extensive surgery. They said I had an endometrioma, also known as a chocolate cyst. That was a clear classic sign of endo. Then I had my uterus, I believe, was attached to my sidewall with all the yucky adhesions and fibrosis. I had fibrosis of my liver, which they couldn't understand. And I remember them asking me, like, "Do you eat healthy? Are you healthy?" And I was like, "Yeah, like so clean, you know, no bad habits." And that was another thing, that endo can cause a lot of scarring on organs. So I was kind of a mess inside, and that was going on for all these years. And I never knew that was endo.
So for the 20 years that you were getting your period, every time it was this horrible bleeding. Yes. Did you go at some point, did you go on birth control? Like, was that an option that was given to you?
That was always the option given. It was just kind of like, some women suffer more than others. Let's put you on the pill. And I didn't like being on the pill. Everyone has their own path and their own journey. But for me, I just didn't like it. I always felt bloated. I felt uncomfortable. And I didn't really get a reprieve. From my periods. I was still having irregular periods. I would sometimes get my period every 17 days, every 10 days. I was sometimes cycling twice a month. It felt like my whole body only got one decent, I wouldn't even say a good week, like a decent week out of the month. So it was like, I was in constant PMS or period mode.
Oh my God, that is so hard.
It was hard. Yeah.
Okay. So you did you stay on the pill a long time? Cause that's, this isn't really working for me.
I think the longest was like 7 months. I could stick to it. And then I'm like, what am I doing? There's more downside for me than there is upside. But that was, those were long years. And I look back and I think I never had any indication this was or could have been an illness. I just thought this was like the curse, we speak of.
I just can't, and you think about, even with your girlfriends, you talk about your period, like, ugh, I can't go out. I have cramps. Mm-hmm. It never even came up among your girlfriends, probably because even if that were going on with someone else, you all just think it's normal and that's what it's supposed to be like. Because how would we know differently?
Right. And I just turned 41 last month.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. my girlfriends and we did not have that conversation in the schools. Like Endo found us working on having these conversations in the school where there's a curriculum about menstrual health and menstrual health disorders and illnesses like endometriosis so that at least you can understand that these could be potential signs and symptoms of endo. But when I was 11 and 12, we got, here's your baggie. You're going to have, a panty liner, a maxi pad. This is the tampon. And I was like, oh God, and you're out the door and you're just kind of like hiding yourself because you're in so much embarrassment when you're 11, 12 years old.
Of course. So let's go back to EndoFund. Let's talk about, you're an ambassador for EndoFund. Let's talk about this amazing organization because I think the idea of bringing it into schools is everything. Mm-hmm. So tell me how you got involved.
So I actually got involved because when I was diagnosed with endometriosis, I didn't know anyone, or at least I didn't know anyone who would tell me they had it or even thought to connect with me on it. I didn't know where to look for really credible sourcing on the disease. So I found EndoFund. I read a lot about patient stories. I read about what people went through. Then I found Dr. Sechkin, the co-founder of EndoFund. I found his book and I read that cover to cover in one night. And I felt so validated and so heard that so many women, and he used a lot of testimonials of his former patients about what brought them to him and why they did not get treatment for so many years. As we know, there's like an average of 7 to 12 years for delayed diagnostic or diagnoses. So when I found EndoFund, I was like, what can I do to get involved? What can I do to help? And then I started volunteering for them. And then I officially joined 3 years ago as an official ambassador.
And so as an ambassador, what do you do? Like, what are your responsibilities?
So I am the executive producer and host of Endo TV.
So perfect for you.
It is fun and it's fitting. It is the educational arm it's the digital channel. It's on our YouTube for EndoFund, Endo TV. And we have a series of shows. One of them is Let's Talk Period. And that's more of our patient perspective, people that are living with endometriosis, how it's impacted them, other women's health issues, individuals born with the uterus. Then we have Research Corner, where we have cutting edge researchers and scientists who are talking about what they're finding in their studies for endo and their advancements, which is very exciting. Then we also have Ask the Doctor, where we have doctors in kind of all fields under women's health, individuals born with the uterus. And we have them talk about their firsthand experiences as the treating physicians. So it covers a lot of ground.
Amazing. Thank you for the inclusive language too of individuals born with a uterus. I think that's probably been part of the progression of your organization as well, because that's a really hard piece to keep up with. Okay, here's the thing. We all know that prenatals and all supplements and vitamins are not created equal. I love the brand WeNatal. They are revolutionizing the fertility space, and they have created the cleanest, most comprehensive prenatal formulas for both men and women. That's right, for both men and women, hence the name WeNatal. I wish I had them when I was trying to conceive. Unlike most prenatals on the market, which basically have about 12 nutrients each, WeNatal has 24 at research-backed amounts. So for example, 4,000 IU of vitamin D, that is not found in most prenatals. They include nutrients that other prenatals leave out, like methylated vitamins, choline, and iron. You would think you might have to take a million pills for this, but you don't. They fit it all into just 3 pills a day. Keep in mind that men and their sperm are half of the equation here. 50% of sperm are responsible for miscarriage, conception rates, pregnancy outcomes, and the health of a future baby. Even if you or your partner are not trying to conceive, prenatal formulas can be taken as a multivitamin. Y'all know I'm way past my postpartum period and I still take prenatal every day, and I tell you, I feel the difference. Also, if you're not trying to conceive, but you ultimately want to, it's a great insurance policy for when the time does come. Of course, they're offering an exclusive deal to all my listeners that you won't find on any other podcast. It's a free Omega DHA fish oil with any new subscription. It's a $34.95 value. Just use my link to grab this freebie, prenatal.com/fertilitychick. I am telling you, you are going to love it. Okay, so let's get back to your story. So you have surgery. Mm-hmm. I know you had, I think you had it more than once, right?
I did, yes.
Yeah. But I know you also have a miracle son. So tell me how that road transpired.
So I ended up having a second surgery less than a year later. I guess my appendix was left in the first surgery, and that appendix was just a breeding ground for endo. Mm. So I was having signs of appendicitis, but it wasn't reading as appendicitis in the blood work because, you know, you can't see that in the blood work. So only when they went in were they able to see that the appendix was having all these kinds of issues, and that was removed. And then they found more kind of cemented endo situations going on. So at that point, even though I was going through like the egg retrieval process, they sat me and my then partner down and they told us like, hey, this looks like some aggressive endo, and you have such a low AMH that you might want to consider really doubling down and getting, as they said, a fresh batch of eggs. Because it took me a lot of tries to get some good quality ones because my AMH was so low, and it was hard for me to get more than two at a time, if that. And I know that's fortunate and lucky.
But it's also then really hard when you're putting yourself through all of that. Yeah, just two. We all know. We feel that with you too.
Mm-hmm. So they were just like, "Let's. You're cleaned up now. You're cleaned out of all the endo. This is the time to go get those eggs. Try again, and then you know, prepare yourself for an embryo transfer." So my partner and I, he was great. He was just like, "We want our family. Let's have our family." And then we just started going through the process, and it took a while. And now I have my 5-year-old son who was born in 2018.
And was your pregnancy, all in all, was it okay or was it complicated?
I had a very easy pregnancy, which I actually felt the best I had in years. Mm. I had to do the Lovenox, those blood thinning shots.
Oh, I'm sorry. I had to also. They're the devil. They are the devil.
Yeah. And I always wanted like the pretty belly picture for the baby portrait, you know?
Yeah.
And I was just covered in bruises. So I went with like the flowy gown.
Yes.
I'm sure you can relate.
I can.
Yes. I remember doing like the love. It always had to be perfectly timed with all the shots. So I remember being in like a Babies R Us or something parking lot in New Jersey and taking this needle and my 9-month pregnant belly and like, you know, very attractive. But you do what you got to do for for your baby and for their well-being and your well-being. But it was actually my delivery that was very scary and
me too.
Traumatic. Oh, really?
Yeah, you go first.
Okay. So I had a planned C-section. My son was about 9 pounds. I remember very vividly because I was a little cavalier and like, yeah, sure, I'll never need that. When they asked me if I would accept a blood transfusion should an emergency arise. And I was just like, yeah, sure, no problem. Barely thought about it. Was more concerned about, you know, the epidural in the back and my friends telling me that if you move just half an inch, everything could go wrong. And I was like, oh,
right.
So my nerves were high on that. And everything went great with my son being delivered. He was healthy. And then as they were passing him off, you know, showed him to me, there started to be a medical emergency with me. And I remember my point person telling me, I'll never walk away from you. And they walked away from me. And it was like this chaos in the room. And I heard them say, we've got some bleeding here. And then I'm saying, we've got some real bleeding here. And this entire crew rushing in of, you know, medical practitioners, nurses, the doctor, the anesthesiologist. And then they said, okay, we're going to roll you over. And I have no idea what that might've looked like because I was open.
Of course.
And they rolled me over and they shot me with something in my thigh. But again, I was totally numb. So I don't really remember or could feel where they shot me with this needle. And then they're like, it's not working. It's not working. Then they flipped me over again, another shot. And then they said, okay, we're going to start doing some, just, we're going to start pumping your uterus to stop the bleeding. And it was a very serious situation. They got the bleeding to stop. Cut to me feeling completely loopy, completely out of it. I had a uterine adenoid. I hemorrhaged.
Yeah.
And then later that night, I told my son's father, I was like, I don't feel well. And I had the catheter, as you know, C-sections and all of that. And I said, I don't feel well. And he's like, well, yeah, I don't feel well. You just had a C-section and you bled. I'm like, yeah, but I felt like, you know, in Charlie Brown, where everybody taught the adults.
Talk, yes. Such a good way to explain it.
Yes. I felt like, I even asked, I said, is this a massaging bed? It was the weirdest sensation. And I felt as though I started floating. And I felt like when the nurse came in to talk to me, that she was the wah-wah voice. And I was just felt like I was slipping. Like it was very weird. Like I felt like I was slipping away. And I finally, it was when I think someone came in to clean me up. And when she took the sheet off, she gasped and she said, so much blood, and ran out of the room. And then the nurse came in and they were like, oh my gosh, we need to get this under control again. And then I had to have 2 blood transfusions. Mm. So that was the hard part of the delivery.
Did you keep your uterus?
I did. Yes. Okay.
We don't have to go down my story because any of my listeners, okay. I've talked about it a million times, but I ended up having to have emergency hysterectomy.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm so at peace with it. It was. I have twins, boy, girl. It took me forever. I feel like my uterus was like, I'm done. I gave you what you wanted and I'm out. And so I'm very at peace with it. It's different. But I remember that scary. They closed up my C-section and then had to reopen me for my hysterectomy. I know. And I literally remember turning to my anesthesiologist and being like, I puked. And then I looked at him and I said, put me out. I don't want to feel any of this. And just promise me I'll see my children when I wake up. And the nurse was like, looked at me right in the eye, said, you will see your children. And the next thing I knew, it was done. And I was in the ICU. I mean, also I had like a 14 unit blood transfusion, like crazy.
Yeah. And I feel as though I was not properly educated about that possibility.
Totally. And
no one told me.
My doctor said, so what I learned, and you might've learned this too, is that the oncology team actually handles most like uterine hemorrhaging because they are the most specialized in the uterine area. And so my doctor, the week before, like when I was scheduled for my C-section, she said, before your C-section, you're going to meet with the oncologist. And I like freaked out. I remember I called my mom. I'm like, why would my gyno even talk about an oncologist when I'm about to give birth to twins? It's so rude and blah, blah. And she was like, because that's who help in case there's a hemorrhage. And with twins, it's more of a possibility. And I was 40 when I delivered them. So it was like a miracle. Anyway, had she not said that to me, I probably would have been so much more of a mess. As it turned out, my kids came about 48 hours before my scheduled C-section. And so I did not have time to meet with the oncologist before. But she just showed up at my surgery and was like, I'm the oncologist. Do you know why I'm here? And I was like, yes, just take what you need and like move on. Because I was so scared I wasn't going to get to be with my babies after 6 years of infertility. I was like, just do whatever you have to do, you know?
Yes. It's terrifying because like you said, you went through all of this to have your children. The last thing you want to do is not be there to be their mother.
And like that thought never even crossed my mind until you're, like you said, until you're sitting there with your body wide open and like, what the hell is happening here? So we're both miracles. And so are our children.
Amen.
I mean, you have a career that's very much in the spotlight. So what has it been like to handle all of this with your career?
Oh man, I don't know what's wrong with me because I feel like I'm a bit of a machine. Yeah. Like I have, maybe I'm just in severe denial
or something. Or maybe you just love your work. And so it doesn't feel like work, right? And
it doesn't feel like work. And it motivates me. It's very motivating for me because I never want to be down because of an illness I have no control over. Mm-hmm. So I feel like, and I hear this from so many endo patients, they're just so strong and so tenacious. And they all are like, I pushed through the day. I worked through the day. And it's not a way that you should live, right? You should be having a better quality of life. And we all deserve that. But you still want to achieve. You want to be your best. You want to be the best parent you can be. You want to be the best employee you can be. And for me, it's like, I don't want to be sidelined by my endometriosis. And it definitely has put me back sometimes where I have to give into my body, but I'm also like the weirdo that has been rolled into the OR with my phone like this going, on, I have to finish getting this source quote to my editor. I'm not saying it's a good thing,
I think it gets a bad rap to be that much of like a hustler and somebody that loves their job so much, but also when you feel like you're making an impact in your work, like it fills me that way too. And I want to make sure, right? Like I coach people going through infertility. I don't ever want to leave them high and dry. So I will be like quick text while I'm about to bring my kid to the pediatrician or whatever it might be, because that's what it makes you feel like you're making a difference in the world. And I think that's, there's nothing wrong with that.
No, I also feel like we're on this planet one time. And the reason I got so involved with endo, I thought, man, this is a crappy situation, but there's got to be some reason that I was given this disease. There's got to be some reason that I am in a position where I can use whatever kind of platform I have to maybe educate someone, help them feel less alone, even if it's just one person all those years ago, because I felt so alone.
Yeah.
And I found my friends online. I found people on social media who related to what I was going through, and they helped champion me from, you know, all different states across the United States, even different countries. And I had this circle of support and I wanted to offer that same. And I also have this fight in me where if I see someone not getting proper treatment or something seems unjust or unfair, which I think so much of the way women's health and individuals born with a uterus are treated in the healthcare system, I'm okay getting scrappy and getting into the fight and fighting for someone who might not like to do that. But I'm more than happy to.
Yes. I'm exactly the same way. I love it. Are you an Enneagram 8? Do you know? Mm-mm. You know anything about Enneagram? Okay. We'll talk about that offline. I bet you are. Okay. Tell me, how does your endo impact your life now? Like, has it?
I will say now that I'm getting a little older, there's different things going on. I probably have put my health on the back burner. I'm not in the same acute pain that I was in my 30s. But there's definitely things, but I feel like, as you know, you put everything before you, which is a bad thing to do.
Bad.
Cannot do that. We have to put our own oxygen masks on before we can help others. That's what I say to myself when I make my coffee first before my son's breakfast.
Yes. Very good. Good job. He'll be fine.
He'll be fine. He can wait 2 minutes. But I feel as though I have some unaddressed issues right now that I need to take care of.
Okay. I'm going to check in with you on that. Make sure you're taking care of them.
Thank you. Yes. I appreciate it.
Okay. So anybody out there who has endo, what do you want them to know and where do you want them to find resources?
Well, I want them to know that if they think they have endo and they go to a doctor who says that it's just normal or they don't mostly have it, to just leave that doctor and to try to find another doctor. And even if you have to Google gynecologist with a specialty in endometriosis or something along those lines, if you can find someone who at least has some kind of knowledge about the disease, maybe they won't be the person that can treat you, but they might be able to get you in the right direction. Because I know how difficult it is to even find the right practitioner, let alone finding somebody who can treat your endo. And I would say, with all things, knowledge is power, that you just want to be really aware of what the gold standards are. I would say endofound.org for me really helps explain the difference between ablation, excision, different treatments that you can have. I mean, ablation, many doctors, surgeons are against because it's not the root of the endo and it can cause more pain, more problems, more scar tissue. So I would say get as many facts as you possibly can. And then the other thing I would just say is do not feel like this defines you. Mm. It is a part of who you are. It's something you're going to have to learn to live with. It is a chronic illness. When people say, oh, you're cured, I think that's misleading. I think we just have to deal with the disease as it presents itself at each phase. I recently spoke to a very strong young woman who was 26 and just had her first endo surgery. And when I told her my journey, I think I scared her. Mm. And I felt badly about that. And I told one of my friends, I said, I hope I didn't take away her hope. And she said, I think you prepared her for the possibility of what could be ahead. So she's not so scared if it comes back. Every endo patient is different. So have your support group, have your circle, and do not feel ashamed at all by having endometriosis or infertility. These things are not you. They are a part of you, to use one of my dear friend's phrases from the Endo Coalition.
I love that. Well, I feel like you also sort of answered my last question I like to ask, which is like, is there a phrase or a cliche or a piece of advice that either you were given or you like to give? I think you gave a bunch of nuggets, but if there's anything else sticking around there.
Yes. I also think too, when I was going through my infertility journey or fertility journey, I would, and this isn't even a religion thing, but I would pray a lot. I'm a control freak. I'm very type A. And to have no control over the outcome was so difficult for me. I found the IVF process, because it was so methodical, to give me a sense of control. But then the 10-day wait, I was like,
yeah,
this is the reality check that you have zero say in this.
Yes, right. There's a surrender that has to happen that's very hard to make happen.
So hard. And you're consumed by it. So not everyone has the success story of being able to go through IVF and have their babies. But I am a big believer that children choose you. And if you want to be a parent and you very much want a child in your life, you will have that, because there are so many children that need someone so loving, so supportive, so nurturing, that want them. So just because one route doesn't work doesn't mean that you're done. I mean, there's many ways to be a parent. So I never want anyone to lose sight of that if fertility is a roadblock.
I love that. Diana, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. And we will link out to all of you and your places in EndoFound and all of the resources that you've talked about. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, I want to be sure you have the information to get to the resource that is the Endo Foundation. So it's endofound.org. endofound.org. And it has advocacy information, fellowships available, education, treatment support, all kinds of social media links. And as you heard Diana say, she has a YouTube channel devoted to educating people on endometriosis. Please remember, we're still taking advocates for Advocacy Day. DM me or go to resolve.org to sign up. And in the meantime, please rate, like, review, and follow at Abby Feeder on Instagram, at InCircle Fertility, and at The Fertility Chick. And I'll see you next week.